Hello and welcome to the Decibel Abuse Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and remember to leave out milk and cookies for Maurice White tonight. We all know what day it is. And with me, I have...
Do you remember the 21st night of September when Microsoft bought Bethesda for $7.5 billion? What?
And...
Over the Game Boy, that's something, right? They said, Dobby, what a budget website. That's in the shit like jalapeno wine.
I don't know, man. That sounds like it would be pretty tasty. It's certainly the most unique. It would be like a mild compensation prize for the absence of potatoes and all that other good shit. Then again, wine seems like it's too sophisticated for your typical Taco Bell connoisseur. As one myself, I can tell you the appropriate compliment is cheap bottom shelf whiskey. Talk about living moss.
Obviously, you have to go to Red Lobster and get that Mountain Dew Rita, whatever it is.
Oh my god, I thought that was bad Photoshop at first.
Nope.
I'm like, what the hell real. Was that? I thought that was some fake shit. Like, that shit's for real. Like, did this thing Mountain Dew and, I don't know, vodka or some shit, or whatever they put in the margarita? Like, okay.
I'm pretty sure it's just salt and tequila.
And you wonder why I said I don't fuck with Red Lobster. Because they're making shit like this. And the reason why people like them because of the biscuits, which are good as fuck, but that's it. But then again, I'm not a secret person anyway, so, yeah.
Spoiler alert, you can probably find, like, the biscuits in, like, the freezer aisle or something. I've seen them there. So that way you don't have to pair it with... Oh, God, it fucking looks like... That thing looks like you could get radiation poisoning from it.
I don't know what's more dumb, that or the one time somebody made... Was it Doritos? Whatever the fuck it did. It was Mountain Dew and Doritos. What the fuck? I don't know what it is, but I don't want to remember it. And I think I just need to remember it.
Look, guys, I'm a real gamer. Yeah, so this is episode 191 of the podcast. Sadly, still independent without big business ownership. We'll come back to that later. Trust me. So, yeah, anyway, how's everyone's week's been going?
Well, as we commemorate 4 years and possibly a week or so of doing this, I have this to say. Don't buy a car. It's not worth it. Ever. Especially when you have to go take in your car to get some work done. You have to take $1,000 out of your savings to afford the repairs, only to be told that coming back 10 minutes later, because that freaking check engine light doesn't ever want to go away. Yeah. More repairs. For $1,300.
Ouch.
Adulting, it hurts.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to spend some time shopping around, trying to get a better estimate for car repairs, because if I can't get that freaking check engine light off, I can't get it registered and tagged, and I hate everything. And that's just me talking about the football games on Sunday. Everybody's getting hurt, and I want to die.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just another usual week in hell, but hey, at least I got my absentee voting ballot for the chance where we can all hopefully start to unfuck ourselves. I'm just saying, if we screw this up again, we're going to deserve everything we get from it, so don't screw it up this time, everyone!
We need to buy ourselves time to pull the giant dildo out of our asses, and if this election goes the wrong way, it's just getting shoved in twice as far. Now, is that an unpleasant metaphor? Perhaps. Is it apt? I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mark, what about you?
So far this week has been kind of, well, nothing. I mean, I will say that it's getting a lot cooler, which is... break welcoming, because it's like, well, summer's ending, which is good, because, you know what, let's face it, we like something when we was a kid, now as an adult, it's like, we fucking hate it. Because, think about it, it's something what happens, we're out of school. Out of school, we can do nothing. Or, I don't know, I sit outside, but I don't know, we either do that, play video games, watch our TV, all that shit. Now as an adult with jobs, it's like we can't do none of that shit. Or at least we can, but sometimes it's like work is in a way, other adulting shit, like, you know, like what Alex mentioned, getting, you know, paying for a car, which can break your pockets. But I don't know, people ordering the PS5, which, oh boy.
Everybody, don't rush for those pre-orders. You're gonna have time. Trust me.
Just do the common sense thing and wait a year. That's when the kinks usually get worked out.
Just wait a year, like, or wait a few months before buying it, or at least save up. Just wait till you save up and then get some money for a PS5. Or an Xbox, whatever the fuck it's called again. Xbox Series, the Triple X, I don't know.
It's, yeah, Xbox Series Triple X State of the Union starring Ice Cube, I think. Was he in that movie? I don't remember.
Yes, unfortunately. He wasn't that good.
He was, and don't know, it's come October, once Taco Bell and, well, you know, I talk about Xbox, dude, they're going to sell them shits, like, they're going to do this whole winter free Xbox, whatever the fuck you said, but for somebody that's been on the roof of gaming for a while, that I'm talking about myself, I've been hearing a lot about gaming stuff a lot lately, mainly because I hang around a lot of people who talk about gaming.
Yeah. We got to do something with our free time in quarantine.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, as for me, not much aside from playing a handful of games, and I did get an interesting call the other day, and looks like I will apparently be returning to actual work this week, which, you know, stable income, I guess, but technically I was kind of making more on unemployment than I was at work, which, you know, kind of speaks to how fucked the economics of this country is in general. And, yeah, that's gonna be interesting to deal with. But, yeah, well, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it this week. But, speaking of weeks, we now need to talk about stuff that happened last week. Specifically, starting off this usual nonsense with the new song discussions for the past week. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with us and pick up some new tunes. First off, as always, our requisite discussion of the latest cover from the folks at 2 Minutes Too Late Night, which, by the way, quick heads up, they said that their most recent cover that they were working on is running behind, because apparently a lot of the musicians involved in it are all living on the West Coast, and, you know, that place is literally on fire right now. So, yeah, that's delayed, so we won't be talking about them next week, so a little break from that. But for now, we still have the cover to discuss, which this past week was a Fleetwood Mac cover, specifically a song called You Make Loving Fun. Now, I admit, I don't know shit about Fleetwood Mac outside of the occasional shitpost, and of course, The Chain being a song that exists. So, listening to the original, it's some solid enough 70s rock with a vague bit of a contemporary soul vibe with those keyboard and organs and stuff. I'm not sure how it stacks up in the grand scheme of things, but I can vibe with it. And then, of course, there's your lineup for this cover, which features Bill Kelleher of Mastodon on guitar, Johanna Sardonis of Lucifer on vocals, Nick Jost of Baroness on bass, Nick Anderson, former drummer of Swedish death metalers Entombed on drums, and of course on backing vocals you have a couple of members of the 2 Minutes camp, that being Steven Brodsky of Mutoid Man Cave-In on backing vocals, and Emily Panic as well, who has a recurring role in the main show itself as one of Gorsenio's foils, Hard Melissa, who, by the way, I learned is in fact married to none other than LP, which explains why he appeared in the season 1 finale. That makes sense. Yeah. Now, with Axeman Steven Brodsky reduced the backing vocals, there is in fact another Axeman here to take his place. Running a bunch of shred solos all over the place in this song is none other than motherfucking Marty goddamn Friedman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing that happened. The guy who played on the two best Megadeth albums. Enough said. But yeah, as expected, it adapts the original song into the kind of expected buzz-heavy, grooving, hard rock style expected of these kind of covers. Johanna's vocals in particular are a perfect match with her having that kind of, like, 70s bluesy metal hard rock vibe that feels like a perfect counterpoint to, well, an analog, rather, to Christine McVie's vocals and, you know, everybody else singing on that song. And, yeah, it's just a decent cover and all that, but seriously, fucking Marty Friedman shreds all over the place, and it is goddamn magnificent.
Uh-huh. If you want a good example of what Rumors era Fleetwood Mac was like, just go to that one clip from Community with Donald Glover and the pizza and the apartment on fire. That's pretty much what Fleetwood Mac was like when they were making Rumors. Only with a lot more cocaine.
Now there's an idea. Community on crack.
Yeah, this is what Fleetwood Mac would sound like without those Rumors era drama bombs and with Marty Friedman shredding all over it. And yeah, I like it. It's very good. I enjoy the vocal work as well. It's very pop flavored, which is kind of what Rumors was meant to be, sort of a pop flavored album, which yeah, it's all kinds of good stuff.
And now, moving on to our next song here. Oh, hey, look, another Lucy from King Gizzard, in addition to The Lizard Wizard. Because apparently we can afford to have both in this economy. This one's called Straws in the Wind, and at the very least, the music video is less skin-crawling than last time. Instead of a weird X-ray thermal vision, you get comically cheap green screen. That kind of reminds me of that one Real Big Fish music video. You know the one. And it doesn't seem to be as heavily dependent on microtonality, although there is that kind of acoustic solo in the middle where it definitely feels like that King Gizzard-isms are seeping through. Though it is mostly just kind of like this chill, breezy vibe with a lot of really pleasant acoustics and sitars and whatnot. In a weird way, it kind of reminds me of like really early days Pink Floyd, like pre-Dark Side of the Moon era. You know, that's just the vibe I get in there. So, you know, typical Tuesday in King Gizzard land. Lord knows they're probably going to shadow drop an album at some point. Maybe right at midnight on the dot on December 31st. Who friggin' knows anymore?
Yeah, well, this band continues to confuse me despite their fascination of microtonal guitars and VHS filtered grain. I type in my own notes. Green screen work, not grain screen. God. My mind's elsewhere today. The best way I can describe this is that this is like when that one group of musicians at the Renaissance Fair decided to make a music video after listening to a lot of late 60s hippie rock. It's weird, but it's also very 1600s Middle European.
Okay, fair enough. Now moving on to our next track here. It's a new solo joint from Slow Tie, which apparently also features James Blake and production from someone named Mount Kimby. Name sounds vaguely familiar. I can't pinpoint where, though. As you can tell, I don't know much about these things sometimes. But you know who does know quite a bit about James Blake?
Oh, okay. The song is, well, it's very much mellow than what we used to hear from Slow Tie. Like, it got this very, like, very, this piano part playing, which you got, James make distinctive, you know, sound, like, cooing in this, which, the song is pretty, like, kind of, I do got feeling a bit, it's like how it's about, does it have with your, you know, partner, friendship, that type of shit, like, putting yourself in up in our shoes in a situation, like in the video, which yeah, it's like basically Slow Tie and his girl like at a maternity ward, is they're happy and pregnant, all that shit, and then they switch it, like he's the one that's pregnant, which okay, a pregnant Slow Tie, and so much weird shit happens, like you know, from the girl beating this doctor, but he's still being pregnant and all shit. They go out get married, and he's like, what the fuck is going on? And then it gets more weird, as in. He's now a cake. Sometimes a cake, apparently.
Oh, does that mean we need to take a knife to him now?
yeah, the video was fucking weird. Like, even at the end where think about the number in the baby, but the baby's not a cake. And I do, and as the song itself, I do see like, you know, Slow Tide going to a, you know, going to a different mood than what it usually does. And according to this thing on Pitchfork, Stereo Gum, he said it's around the anniversary of his younger brother's passing, which, I kind of sense why that was placed in there. But yeah, this is a pretty interesting track from him doing, you know, something different than what he used to do. But I kind of feel it a bit.
Now to move on to the next track here. So, looks like the band Pup will be releasing a new EP coming out October 23rd, appropriately titled This Place Sucks Ass. What is this place, you may ask? Just vaguely gestures at everything. This place might as well be this whole fucking country at this point. But with that announcement, there is a new single from them called Rot, and this one has those vibes that you would expect with them, with like the super snarky lyricisms and that kind of contemporary garage rock punk energy. But there also is kind of a vague sort of early 2000s Hot Topic emo thing going on in the verses, especially. I mean, to be fair, Pup is a band signed to Rise Records, so you could expect some of those influences to creep in at times. But yeah, you know, it's got a decent energy to it. You know, those really great vocals with those especially great like sarcastic inflections on certain key lyrics and whatnot to let you know that shit's kind of fucked. All you can do is just be a sarcastic bitch about things. Good song.
Yep, very solid, very aggressive, big hardcore punk vibes. I can dig it, even if this is a glorified outtake of a B-side.
Anyway, time to move on to the next track here, and oh hey, it looks like that thing I wanted to happen however many months ago I said it wanted to happen is actually happening. That thing being that the band Help is putting out an album consisting of the various compilations that they've been releasing as one-offs throughout the past year or so. The project is called Disco 4 Part 1, and it is coming out October 16th. And yeah, it has the collaborations that we've heard before, you know, ones with like Full of Hell, JPEG Mafia, Perturbator, Ghostmane, etc., with some additional unheard collabs from the likes of No Life and even 100 Gex. Ooh, that's going to be a good
one. Okay, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so there is one non-collaboration track here, that being the one that we are talking about right now, and that is the album opener, Cyberpunk 2020. And as expected from a title like that, it does have a very moody kind of Blade Runner cyberpunk dystopia vibe. The drums belting out this really simple tom rhythm with the guitars, you know, just eking out this melancholic droning melody that, like, echoes through the mix. Kind of like a more synthy version of, like Chromatics by way of Perturbator. It mostly loops the rhythm and the melody throughout the whole song. There is a bit of this ethereal tremolo thing in the middle, but overall it's just, like, again, repeating that kind of cyberpunk dystopia vibe, and certainly sets the mood for the record, since, you know, it is the intro, and I can't wait to hear that 100 Gex collab. That's gonna be sweet!
Yeah, it's a very fitting track and video for this very stupid dystopia we're all in. A downbeat electro vibe that only reminds me that, yes, we are all still stuck in a hell of our own collective doing. Isn't it grand?
At the very least, we'll have new Eric Andre to help us get through the next couple months.
True.
Yep. Yeah, to put it short, yeah, this song is a mood, like a big mood. The video is definitely a mood, especially where it's like everything's all red and shit, like how I'm guessing the West Coast must look like, or at least I hope, well, at least, you know, it used to go. But everything is pretty much Blade Runner right now. Blade Runner 2049, hell, it might be Blade Runner 2022.
Yeah, I think we still gotta wait on that anime, though.
It's not far from now. Like, that's kind of 2 years from now, damn. So what do you mean by Final Lotus that has shit on what the director did?
Who knows? But yeah, all the future media is creeping up on us. Remember when House of the Dead 3 took place in the far-off future of 2019? Yeah.
Well.
Anyway, moving on to the next track. So, this Friday, we'll see the drop of the much-anticipated new album from Deftones, Ohms. And so, we previously discussed the lead-off single, which was, again, the album Closer. Sorry. I know I keep harping on that. Moving on. But yeah, now we're talking about the, what I believe is the album opener, Genesis. Get it? The album opener is called Genesis. Words mean things. Anyway, so yeah, as for the song itself, the second it opens up, there are some major White Pony era vibes with that clean, echoing guitar melody and those droning synth runs before the full band kicks in on this really slow, downtuned guitar groove that kind of feels more reminiscent of like a Diamond Eyes type track than anything else. Of course, when it's, you know, delving into that heavy territory, it does contrast that with the more melodic chord progressions in the chorus. There is this really cool little lead guitar part in the bridge that leads out as it builds up to that last chorus. Yeah, it's just a pretty solidly written song that knows how to contrast heavy with melody and build momentum for certain key parts. Like, yeah, I'm going to be there on Friday. It's looking like it's going to be some pretty good stuff.
Yep. If I'm being totally honest, this would have worked better as a lead-off single with how slow and kind of quiet it starts before going hard into that main section. It's structured fairly simple with those droning low C guitar chords serving as the pulse for the track, and yeah, it works really well, especially going into that cleaner middle break section. Very good track. I will check out this album as well, because yeah, see, this seems to be a thing. 2000, White Pony, 2010, Diamond Eyes, 2020. This album. Funny how that works.
Oh, yeah, they're all apart by a decade. I just realized that.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to our next pair of tracks here, which come courtesy of a rapper named Saba, who we've discussed before. They were on the, I believe, 2017-2018 Adult Swim Singles program. I know that's where we heard of him. I'm pretty sure that's where it was.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think we heard him before. So, okay, so yes, we got two tracks out. Now two, like, Lucy tracks. Which, first one we got here is Miss Whoever. Who? Okay. Okay, anyway, yeah, this song is more of a, it is very, you know, this laid-back, hazy track, which raps about, you know, his current spot in the rap game while, you know, balancing his normal life and making sure fame don't get to his head. So, goes with, you know, shit like friends, the changes, like how the public sees him, like all that shit. It's like it's a cool vibey track. I can go with that. Like the beats and lines do good. It's like the course we like miss whoever I pray all time, all the same. Sadly, I see things that I thought would change all the time, all the same. I don't want shit. I just call to say how your day, can't complain. I'm on phone with you all today. Work two ways. It's kind of like the song is like, well, I'm in the rap game, but fuck, if I do something, end up being as big as I am, what the fuck I'm gonna do? I can't handle the pressure, like that sort of shit. But yeah, this would be this song got a cool vibe going for it.
And then, of course, there's the other track, which features Mr. Denzel Curry, so you know that's why we had to talk about it.
Yeah, pretty much, you know what it's leading to. This one's a very, very different than the last track. This had more of a faster trap beat, more of a trap beat, sort of. I want to say, about the dirty stickers of, the social life, the music industry, all that shit, which, that's it. And, okay, Simon does a good verse in here. Denzel, what more can you say about him? You know what I gotta say. I do realize that this line for him is like, Well, I say it might be dated, but then again, we don't know, like, this line, we goes like, cause like, I still think these airports still cover hit the map, but down to his, not to say at this point, you're tired of taking naps. I lost confidence to a drug manager and hopes I can bring him back. Mama said the revelation, doubt is all looking for these relations. But yeah, this check's pretty alright.
Well, there's probably more that can be said for the next song we gotta talk about here. So, for our next track, we are apparently talking about Alter Bridge for some reason, which is a band that I'm told exists, and look, I don't know, you're asking me to wade through, like, mid-2000s onward radio-friendly hard rock sludge, and it's like, no. But yeah, apparently they got a new EP called Walk the Sky 2.0 coming out November 6th. We have a song here called Native Son, and yeah, it sounds as basic as you can fucking get. I mean, there's a couple of decent riffs here and there. The vocals are mildly obnoxious. Its structure is super simple. Look, what do you want me to say? It's like trying to describe the taste of air.
Honestly, it's not super, super bad. It's just guilty of being too generalized over this whole hellish hellscape we're all stuck in. The riffs are good, but it's just the lyrics that are pretty stock, all things considered. And just for the record, this is what we call radio rock pick your poison. You can either pick this song or the next song.
I don't know. At least the next song has more of an identity to it, at least in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, moving on to the next song here. So you might remember a few years back that there was some big DC crossover event called Dark Knights Metal that produced a little EP soundtrack that had contributions from the likes of Alexis Krauss and I think one of the guys from Mastodon. I don't remember too much about it because you're asking me to keep track of fucking big crossover timeline erasing comic book event miniseries thing. I don't even think comic readers can keep track of this shit half the time. Fucking, you could ask Linkara to explain this shit and it's gonna be like, you know, he's gonna be sitting at the whiteboard like Charlie from Always Sunny. But anyway, but now there is a sequel event that started publication this June called Dark Knights Death Metal. And it itself is producing its own original soundtrack coming out at some point to be announced. But now we have a song for that soundtrack from Rise Against, a band that, unlike Alter Bridge, actually did have an identity at some point. Because at least I can tell what a Rise Against song sounds like if you pit it up against an Alter Bridge song. But yeah, the song here is called Broken Dreams, Inc., and I mean, it sounds like Rise Against. It's got a nice, fast, punky energy to it. Tim McGrath's vocals are still, you know, pretty distinguishable and have a decent energy to them. And the lyrics are about being disenfranchised by the failures of contemporary society, and something about Barry Allen running low on the Speed Force. Now I think about it, I haven't watched DC's The Flash since, like, season 4. I should probably catch up. But yeah, give me this over fucking whatever barely edible sludge Alter Bridge is seeping out of.
Alright, so hey, remember when this band was big back in 2007? Yeah, I do too. And now they're trying to sound like a more melodic Bad Religion on this track, and I don't really know why.
I don't know, again, still listen to it over Alter Bridge. Let me tell you.
There are some good Alter Bridge songs out there, but let's just move on.
Time to move on to the next track here, which, oh hey, look at that, it's Busta Rhymes, haven't heard from him in a while, it feels like, yeah, who is apparently coming out with a new album without a release date, at least yet anyway, called Extinction Level Event 2, The Wrath of God. Well, I'm not going to lie, that actually kind of sounds like the most metal AF album title to not be from a metal act.
I kind of get he always got titles like that. Like, he got one album called Anarchy, which such an album cover, and you wonder, there might be something that looks like a metal album. But yeah, I ain't heard from this dude in a while. Like, I heard him in Verses and so from other rappers, but yeah, not something from his own shit. Like, I know he got, like, I heard he got another song before this, but yeah, we're talking about this one. And this features, oh boy, Anderson .Paak.
There's a pairing I was never expecting.
Oh, did you all say what the song is called?
You!
Yeah.
You. Damn, like, that's a weird type of song. Yeah, like, that's a weird type of song, and you do say, like, Busta and Paak are, I mean, on full rapper mode, especially Paak, which over the beat, which he produced, which, this is a very memorable beat from Paak, which I didn't expect from him to do something like this, but it's sort of an alright beat. I'm not gonna say it's bad, I don't think it's bad, it's like, okay, it, look at with his, you know, with his course, what you say, but at the bus, say, you, time to get back. Came right back to get the loot. Oh damn, I can. Okay, that is not so. So you know, you got Busta Rhymes and Anderson .Paak spinning verses with, you know, Pac being first, which okay, and then Busta Rhymes going second. And the thing with the, and yeah, I got to talk about the music video, which them going like spy versus spy type of shit, which is like, with like them intercepting each other, but in this cartoonish ass looking video, which directed by the same who did the Tupac Bob. All Eyes on Me, the Tupac Bob pick that you don't remember and don't care about, which, well, yeah, you shouldn't. But this video is just all kinds of like, you got from Cypher Spy to him doing that curved bullet shit from Wanted for some reason.
I guess there's a movie I haven't thought about in forever.
Yeah, this is kind of a, I don't know, a head scratcher for video, like, I like the rapping. I mean, Busta Rhymes still. I mean, got it. Like he still rap. He's been doing that fast rapping, which all right, it's still impressive. Impact's doing his thing. He's always still. But yeah, I don't know when this album's gonna come out. I mean, I ain't heard Busta Rhymes album in over a long ass time. As I remember him, the last thing I remember from him was he joined Young Money. That I think he left, which is good.
That is the thing that happened.
Yeah, but like I said, I think he left, which is, you know, that's good, because that money got old and dry.
Yeah, it did.
Which means my Tiger left.
And nothing of value was lost. But now we move on to our last song here. So, a couple months back, there had been an unexpected new song drop, courtesy of Boehner James Keenan's side project, Pucifer. And as expected, we now have word of a new album from this band, because, you know, we had Perfect Circle, we had Tool, now it's time for these guys. The new project is due out October 30th, and it's called Existential Reckoning, which, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what I'm going to do the day before Halloween. Not listen to the album necessarily, just Existential Reckoning in general. I pretty much do that every Friday anyway. But, with that album announcement, we have the coinciding single, The Underwhelming, and, you're gonna have to take my opinions here with a grain of salt since I've never followed, you know, Pucifer all that deeply. Listening to this, it's got this kind of simple synth bass vibe on this pretty straightforward drum rhythm while Maynard's falsetto vocals sing over top everything. I assume the lyrics are supposed to mean something, but, you know, you're asking me to decipher Maynard James Keenan lyricisms here, which, you know, is like trying to, again, whiteboard, Pepe Sylvia, you know, the whole deal. All I really have to say that's particularly distinct is that the guitars have this very twangy vibe to them that's kind of quasi Queens of the Stone Age in certain parts. I'm not sure if that's reflective accurately of the bigger picture of Pucifer or not, so, again, take that with a grain of salt.
This does feel like it's more of an exception to the rule rather than the rule itself. And I kind of like the funk feel this track has going for it, along with the alternating vocals adding a little bit of late 70s pop flair to it. It's interesting, I'll give it that much.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to buff up on some Pucifer at some point before Halloween Eve. Anyway, that about does it for the news song discussion, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have some news to discuss, so stay tuned. And we're back. So, to start up here, remember that their Beelzebubs thing? You know, that humorous webcomic about the black metal dude that spawned an album that I was told was apparently a pretty good black metal release overall?
Yes.
Yeah, I distinctly remember Alex talking about that. I still need to get around to that at some point. I got a backlog, but anyway, it looks like Beelzebubs will be extending far beyond just the webcomic and actual recorded album format, as they are apparently gearing up to produce an actual Beelzebub's animated series. So currently what is known is that it's going to, this first season that it's been greenlit for is going to consist of, you know, 13 episodes, 22 minutes apiece, animated, of course, in black and white, two-dimensional, you know, to mimic the feel of the comic itself, centering on the father, Sloth, who hasn't given up his dreams of metal stardom, you know, him trying to balance wanting to be a famous metal musician with, you know, his responsibilities as a family man, with his photographer wife, Lucifer, and their two children, Lilith and Leviathan, as expected to be named if you're a family of this ilk. According to the Variety piece here, the series is being produced through the Finnish animation studio Pyjama Films, and apparently already has backing from Finland's national broadcaster, YLE. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing to see. You know, good old-fashioned, heartfelt sitcoms shenanigans combined with absolutely brutal metal aesthetics. It'll kind of be like that one TV show you sometimes saw on Nickelodeon whenever you stayed home from school, except not pointless filler and minus Gene Simmons, which, you know, isn't really so much of a bad thing when you think about it, whatever the fuck that show was called.
Oh, yeah, My Dad the Rockstar. What a waste of time that was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am very much looking forward to this. I am a pretty big fan of the webcomic. It's, you know, very fun, lighthearted stuff, considering the subject matter in question. And, yeah, further details say that production is slated for next year, with the quote being, "The first episode is a festive one, so if everything runs smoothly, it will air in Christmas 2022. Somehow I can see Netflix acquiring this, because why not?
I mean, something like this, you figure, probably has some sort of niche appeal that a streaming, you know, audience in North America can capitulate to.
Uh-huh.
Plus, of course, they're spending some money on this. According to the piece here, the first season has a budget of $4.4 million, or approximately $370,000 per episode, which I'm told is generally sort of the production budget range for a lot of, you know, decent contemporary animated shows.
Yeah, that's usually the ballpark range.
I wonder, would they keep it running, or will they do one of them that did that Dark Crystal show that got canned?
Oh,
after winning the Emmy. That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's...
Like, here's your Emmy, you're canceled, by the way, get the fuck out.
Yeah, that's the nature of the business. And since we don't have it here on the list, big Emmy wins. Ludwig Göransson for music on The Mandalorian, and Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross for music of Watchmen. So, yeah, good for them.
Nice.
So close to getting that EGOT.
Uh-huh. Also, apparently Schitt's Creek is like the greatest show ever, and Canada is rubbing it in all of our faces.
Okay. And also, not music-related, but... But Goofus and Dyer for winning an award, which people say is an upset, but I don't know. But I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that's good for her.
Yep, award season stuff. That's always fun to throw in there. But since we're on the topic of, you know, industry awards, that gives us this in to segue into the industry. Although not the television industry, the film industry. You know what's a good web series? Cinemadonna. That thing where Todd in the Shadows reviews the entirety of Madonna's filmography. Looks like he's not quite done yet, though. It will probably have to appear at some point in the future, because, as it turns out, we are, in fact, getting a Madonna biopic, according to a press release that was sent out on her behalf. It is actually going to be entering production, courtesy of a screenplay co-written between her and Diablo Cody. And she herself is going to be the director, this making her third directorial effort between 2008's Filth and Wisdom and 2011's Whatever. she, barring the writing and directing, she's not acting in it herself, so she's not pulling a Tarantino here. But she's, of course, going to be deeply involved in the search to find whoever can portray Madonna on the big screen.
Oh boy.
Yeah, of course, it's being produced by Amy Pascal through Universal Pictures, although, while there's no official name for it yet, she's been teasing that it might be called Live to Tell, but, you know, who knows, that name could change to anything. So, yeah, to all you Madonna fans, there's something you'll look forward to seeing. Who knows, probably on VOD, because, I'm doubting this plague is subsiding anytime soon.
Yeah, and this is by Universal. I mean, they do VOD shit, so, well.
Yeah, they might, they'll probably get their money's worth off of it, again, whenever it comes out. But, with brief tangent out of the way, it's time to move on to our last real topic here. So, throwing back to what we said earlier, yeah, fucking Microsoft throwing out big bucks to acquire fucking ZeniMax, the parent company of Bethesda, which itself, you know, owns other companies, ZeniMax in particular. They also own companies like Tango Gameworks and stuff. So, between those two and the other game development studios they own, basically Microsoft now owns big name franchises like Dishonored, The Elder Scrolls, The Evil Within, and of course Doom and Wolfenstein, among many others. An acquisition which raises two major thoughts. One, wow, this increasing, you know, corporate consolidation on the half of big game companies is really disturbing. Someone should probably get in the way of that. And secondly, shit, does this mean I have to shell out for Game Pass if I want to play whatever the next Doom is? God fucking damn it. And I had just finished replaying Doom 16 and was about to start on Doom Eternal. Like, oh man, that's, it's gonna be fun to deal with. Or whatever the next Wolfenstein is, because I do like shooting some Nazis and stuff. That's fun. But, anyway, why we're talking about Bethesda is because, they also own the game franchise Quake, because again, they own id Software, and that's one of their children. And last week it was announced that the soundtrack to the original Quake, which as we all remember was composed by none other than Nine Inch Nails back in 96, was getting released on vinyl. And pre-orders went up on the band's website, and they had a very interesting message to accompany the release. There was an all caps note that stated something to the effect of, and I quote, "A certain unnamed video game publisher prevented the release of some behind-the-scenes essays by former, you know, id developers John Carmack and American McGee." But those essays were, you know, they were actually linked, like, right there. And, of course, they use the very, very shade-throwing phrasing of, "A certain unnamed video game publisher made it impossible to include this in the package, so please honor their wishes by not clicking here to even see the essays, or here to print the booklet out yourself." Yeah, you can tell there's some salt here. And, you know, those links did send you to the essays that you could read alongside the original vinyl release, as it was intended. But apparently a few hours later, though, those notes were removed from the vinyl store listing, and the links even directing to the essays themselves were taken down as well. I guess for some reason, Bethesda just hates things that, you know, would make people happy for some reason. Because they can't respect good game franchises.
Wouldn't be the first time. Yeah, I don't think we can pull up anything about this. I'm trying to find it myself because, as you mentioned, those listings were completely scrubbed from the listing of the vinyl soundtrack, which is kind of neat. Oh, and just for added stuff on here, they're also releasing the soundtrack to The Social Network on vinyl, so that way everybody can listen to the music of the movie that showed everybody just how much of a fucking asshole Mark Zuckerberg really is.
We probably should have paid more attention.
Yeah.
So, yeah, presumably at some point we can probably learn more about why the fuck Bethesda's getting so pissy about those essays. I didn't get a chance to read them myself, but I can only assume that there's some tea being spilled, possibly. But who knows? I mean, we're talking about retrospective essays on a game from 96, and I'm not even sure Bethesda definitely didn't own id back then, so it's like, what the hell is their problem?
I did manage to find an archived version of it. I don't think there's anything super disparaging throughout this whole thing. It's mostly just John Carmack talking about Nine Inch Nails and the culture at the company at the time. That's as much as I'm able to get out of this whole thing. So I don't know what Bethesda's deal is, but hey, Todd Howard's your problem now, Phil Spencer.
Good luck with dealing with that. Phil Spencer, I have a newborn child, Todd Howard, but can we put Skyrim on him? Todd, who the fuck even let you into the hospital? Skyrim. Yeah. I already put it on the heart monitor. What the fuck? God damn it.
Yeah. Also,
Why didn't we buy you again?
Also, there are some pictures in here that have been digitally altered. So I guess whoever was in charge of this whole thing didn't want these images and screenshots to get put out for the public to see for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah, just be like that. But anyway, now with that out of the way, we can discuss this one last bit of business here, and that is, of course, the new album releases for the week of September 25th, 2020. Starting at the top, we have the newest album from The Ocean with Phanerozoic Part 2, Mesozoic, Cenozoic. We have a new project, courtesy of Public Enemy, called What You Gonna Do When the Grid Goes Down. There's the new Joji project coming out, Nectar. There's a new 2 Chainz album, So Help Me God. No, that's actually what the album is called, So Help Me God.
Okay.
There's, of course, the new Action Bronson album, Only for Dolphins. So remember, none of us are allowed to listen, unless you want to out yourself as a dolphin. There's the debut album from Spillage Village called Spillageon. I'm probably pronouncing that horribly, but, you know, whatever. I don't know how to pronounce made-up words. There's the new Idols album, Ultramano. A new solo project from Sadie Dupois of Speedy Ortiz called Haunted Painting. The new Tim Heidecker solo album, Fear of Death. A new Machine Gun Kelly project, Tickets to My Downfall. No thanks, I will not be paying the price of admission. And, of course, as previously mentioned, the newest studio album from Deftones with Ohms. Now it's time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, so for the time being, in the Discords or of Azure, where I pop in to talk about stuff and do what people on Discord usually do. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Metavid Media. Discord, Mac2 Hybrid, Instagram, Mac2.0, on my site, Mind Everyone, www.devilpress.com, where recently I put out a new Chateau Trap game, which is out right now, which never really I put out like before we recorded this, so yeah.
Yep. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Barracuda. You know, Discord, I think I'm just Barracuda. You can, of course, subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up by the weekend, so subscribe, hit the bell tab so you're notified when stuff goes up there. Follow us on Twitter, you know, at SewerRezzo. Likes on Facebook. Email me, robert@sewerresolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. And, of course, visit the main site for, you know, written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all the good stuff. Be sure to jump into our own Discord so you can retch at the disgustingness of fast food products. And of course, a shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this week. We'll of course be back next week with our typical nonsense galoferings. And until then, God, seriously, 7.5 billion. That's a lot of money. What?